from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. You're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Shelby Arvizin is the Chief Financial Officer for Providence's South Division, responsible for financial performance for a $9.3 billion integrated delivery system across the state of California. A Gonzaga business grad, Shelby has had the opportunity to work in financial reporting, operational finance in both Olympia and Spokane, mergers and acquisitions, and serve as the Chief Accounting Officer all over the course of her 21 years at Providence.
Good. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
We're doing very, very well. We're wrapping up finals week right now. So we're getting close to the end, but it's still kind of a mad dash.
Yeah. Stretch.
This is Stephanie.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
My esteemed colleague. And she's gonna help out today and co-host. She is a management professor, HR specifically.
Yeah.
And she joins us most recently from the University of San Diego, but she's
from Purdue-Fort Wayne.
Oh, Purdue-Fort Wayne. Sorry. Yeah. My bad. She was a guest on the podcast as well. She's a Southern California person originally.
So yes.
I just associate her with sunshine and palm trees, but.
Perfect.
Yeah. That's probably fair. I'm Angeles area, not San Diego, but okay. I did go to University of San Diego for my PhD.
Well, thanks again for joining us. So good to see you, as always. And you're familiar with our format, so we'll start with Shelby, kind of where it all began. What brought you to Gonzaga University?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, probably like a lot of people and students, you know, I think finding myself at Gonzaga was something that in the moment was kind of just a non-event, right? It seemed like, you know, I was a high schooler. I didn't know much, obviously. I knew I wanted to go to college. I actually did know that I wanted to focus on business and accounting. Beyond that, there was kind of a theme developing as I looked at and visited schools around, you know, smaller schools, Jesuit schools in particular. Other than that, it really came down to, you know, campus visits, good experience at Gel Weekend, and, you know, candidly, good financial aid package, and kind of off I went, I think. Probably like a lot of Gonzaga students, in hindsight, it was, looking back on my life, probably, you know, one pivotal and transformational experience. But, you know, you don't know that at the time. Like, I'm a kid going to high school, and I need a college degree, and off you go.
Totally get it. And so you arrive on campus, and you're rethinking accounting before.
I was actually, I took an accounting class in high school, there was something about that. It was like the old school, like we actually, you know, T accounts and the two columns and balancing your debits and credits. And there was something actually that really resonated with me. So, yes, I actually was kind of into accounting and business in high school. And so I sensed I would go that direction. And it, I'd say, quickly solidified when I got to Gonzaga.
And who did you have for principals? Do you remember?
Professors?
Yeah.
Oh, it was probably Eddie Bierer. So in general, all of my courses, I think, were Eddie Bierer, Kay Carnes, and Gary Weber.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only options. I mean, maybe Walt Eats at one point.
Yep. Yes. I forgot about him. Yep.
Yeah. Well, fantastic. Yeah. And then you were committed. You're pot committed from the start. You stuck with it. Okay. And what happened next? Or if you want to talk a little bit about your Gonzaga experience, anything that resonated with you here, if there was anything, you know, pivotal, and if not.
I think, well, you know, like a lot of experience, there's definitely a sense of community that I just find when you try to describe it to people, it's really hard to describe. So, you know, it's definitely, you get your degree and you do the things in work, but you know, there's something about the community. Some of my closest friends today are people I met at Gonzaga. We still laugh about some very old memories as well as making new ones. I would say career-wise, one of the things at Gonzaga that was very pivotal for me was I actually, you know, again, you start out with kind of just a simple thought, very practical in nature. I need an internship, you know, getting an accounting degree. When I graduate, I'd like to have some experience. So was kind of looking for an internship. Dr. Weber actually connected me with an internship at Hospice of Spokane. So that was my first ever accounting job. And it was definitely pivotal. I've been in healthcare in my entire career. And for me, it was something that I just found really early on. I feel very fortunate that I had through that experience kind of an immediate recognition that I could do something that was fulfilling to both my heart and my head, right? Accounting, finance, business made sense to me. But I also am somebody who likes to make a difference. And it was kind of a way I've always told people throughout my career, I was not called to be a nurse or a doctor or, you know, right at the bedside patient care. So this, for me, healthcare has been a way of, you know, how can I make a difference in my own way? And I just feel very fortunate that I had that experience at hospice and was able to kind of get connected with the industry very early on. That's a little less common, I'd say, for finance, IT, HR professionals. You know, you can work in lots of different industries. And so I think it's uncommon to, you know, your junior year in college to find the industry that you love and stick with it. But that was a big part of, has been a big part of my journey in that. So
you were targeting like the healthcare from then on based on that experience.
Yeah, I was. Yep. One of the things I got to do in that role is, you know, I started part-time during the school year. The first summer I was there, our accounts payable person was retiring, and my boss asked if I would come on full-time for the summer and do accounts payable. And the hospice model is once a patient goes on hospice, essentially Medicare pays hospice, and then hospice pays all the related bills. And one of the things I got to do in accounts payable was families would call me. You know, again, here I am a junior in college. And families who were going through, you know, very impactful moment and time in their lives would call me and say, I got this bill, and it was my understanding that hospice would take care of it. I don't understand why I'm getting it. And I had the honor and privilege of saying to them, you're right. Here's my address. Please send that to me, and we'll take care of it. And it was just, it was amazing. It was a great experience. So here I am a couple decades plus later, still doing healthcare.
That's incredible, and I believe there's only one. Is it Spokane Hospice? Is that the one hospice in town? But
Hospice of Spokane. Yep, there are actually, I believe now, three hospices in Spokane, but okay. I was Hospice of Spokane, and it was the only one at the time. Yep.
I would say universally, I hear good things of people that experience their services. Like, I've never heard a bad thing about that organization or those organizations. So, yeah, very cool.
Do you feel like your time at GU or even prior to maybe driving you to come here with the care for the community has really aligned with what you have done now in your career and, you know, what you just told us about why you stay in healthcare?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think circling back, you know, the first question about finding my way to, you know, Gonzaga, you know, I think when you're younger, there's parts about who you are as a person that you don't have the maturity to fully understand or recognize. But I definitely think, as I mentioned, as I was searching for schools, there was a theme around Catholic schools, Jesuit schools in particular. And, you know, that was something I couldn't have named or explained at the time, but definitely that sense of, you know, wanting to make a difference and contribute. I think that's been a theme my whole career, and definitely plays out in what I do today. And I think, like I said, was a part of me early on that I couldn't name as well as I could today. But
I love that alignment. That's really exciting to see.
Yeah.
Very cool. And still a student, graduate. What's the next step for Shelby?
Yeah, so immediately after graduation, I started in public accounting. So I worked at Arthur Anderson, was there during the Enron era, and so then also transitioned to KPMG. I was part of the Northwest practice, so we kind of all went together, if you will. But similar with the healthcare theme, I mean, I just knew coming out of college that I only wanted to do healthcare. And so, again, that's really unusual in public accounting. Typically, there's a lot of good reasons to go into public accounting, but one of them is exposure to lots of different industries. So you kind of get to sample what you like, and I was one of those rare people that you know, during the interview process, I was very clear, I want healthcare clients. So, spent a few years in public accounting, as I said, with both Arthur Andersen and KPMG, and had exclusively healthcare clients during that time. So, while my colleagues were running around and traveling to some cool places, I was sticking around in the Northwest, traveling, you know, places like Cedar Woolley and Billings, Montana, and other, you know, less exotic sites, but really, really great clients, and a really great way to, you know, I think get an early foundation in my career, some really good experience, but also, again, stay in the healthcare industry.
For the students listening, and may not be really familiar with Arthur Andersen, kind of maybe talk about that experience a little bit with what happened and how that unfolded.
Yeah. So when I joined public accounting, I believe it was Big Five, and Arthur Andersen was one of them. So same as the firms today, you know, audit division, tax division. There was, I'm going to say bad behavior at Enron, which was an audit client. And there was a lot of things happening, you know, from a lawsuit perspective, both against Enron and its auditor, and Arthur Andersen, and kind of why didn't Arthur Andersen, you know, catch that. So one of the things I've always joked is I think, and this played out at Providence as well, I think in some respects my career path was destined to be in an environment of change. You know, that was definitely a time when, like I said, fortunately KPMG picked up the whole practice. So I was, you know, all of, you know, less than 2 years into my career, and I'm going through this experience, and kind of a, you know, a lot of people were uncertain about their jobs and scrambling, you know, well, where am I going to work? Is there going to be a job, et cetera, in the Northwest practice? Like I said, we all went to KPMG and were able to bring our clients with us, but there did need to be, it was very chaotic. There did need to be kind of a firm closure of audits under Andersen. So we were scrambling to get all of those done because before the firm kind of closed, and then transition to KPMG and start up with a new firm and kind of relearn the ways of doing audits kind of under their methodology. So that was a transition. I think the most memorable part to me that felt just very surreal at the time is, again, we were scrambling to get all this work done for our clients when Arthur Andersen was officially indicted. And I remember we were at our cubes and we're, you know, doing all the work papers and doing all the files. And we knew it was, you know, it was going to be publicly announced by the Department of Justice. So we all just stopped and we walked to the common area where there's some TVs and the news was on. And we watched Arthur Andersen be indicted on national TV. And then we went back to work and, you know, for work of our clients and trying to get the work done. So it was definitely surreal at the time. And like I said, to go through that in your early 20s was a unique experience.
Amazing, yeah.
I feel like, you know, I learned about Enron from my business school undergraduate classes. So you are the second conversation I've had this week about someone who worked with Enron or worked adjacent to them with another company. And so it's very interesting to see how that's still coming up as such an ethical issue in our society and as an example.
And I want to say there was recently, I think it was a hoax, but they were buying billboards in Houston for Enron and saying, we're back and we're going to be an ethical leader in energy. But it was all a joke, I think. It was kind of like, what is this? What's going on?
And why is somebody doing that? Just for fun?
Yeah, I know. Right. I guess, yeah, I think of all the lives that were ruined and everything there. So that's pretty awful.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so then you're at KPMG. And then what happens next?
So I didn't stay in public accounting very long. You know, again, it's something that I'm able to explain so much better in hindsight than in the moment. But I knew I was ready to really be more on the client side, on the provider side. So I was kind of starting to do, you know, some looking and see what was out there. Providence actually was a client. And so, you know, there are some very specific and appropriate rules about, right? You're like, you don't call your client and say, hey, are you hiring? That just wouldn't be professional, in addition to kind of being outside of normal audit standards. So they did not know I was looking. And then after, you know, the audit was done, they actually called and said, hey, we're looking for, you know, somebody to do our financial reporting. Are you interested? And so, you know, again, it was and somewhat providential timing, I did happen to be looking, but also, you know, a great compliment for a client to call and invite you, because I always joke, nobody really likes their auditors, right? It's an important function. It's an important process, but it's disruptive to your routine work, right? You've got your routine and then the auditors come in and you have to get the audit done and do the routine work. It's extra. So I took that as a big compliment. And so, you know, pursued the opportunity and yeah, ended up with Providence. And that was just over 21 years ago. So started in financial reporting. So a little more of a narrow focus, but well aligned with kind of the accounting degree and then obviously what I'd done in the audit space. So it was a great way to kind of first get my foot in the door at Providence and kind of see what it was like on the industry side.
That's more common than we maybe think, because I have a few friends that worked for one of the big four and then took a job at one of their clients.
Definitely not unusual. Yeah. So, very cool. So at Providence and been there for some time in a variety of roles. Maybe give us some highlights of that.
Sure. So 21 years. One thing I always share with people, especially internal to Providence, is I certainly didn't set out to, you know, with the idea that, oh, I'm definitely staying two decades plus. So I have re-chosen Providence several times. Part of that, huge part of that, is the people. I love the people I work with. You know, when I kind of mentioned my personal passion around feeling like I'm making a difference, that's definitely shared throughout the organization. And so that's been a big theme of mine. The other thing is I've had the opportunity to do lots of different things. So I started in financial reporting. I also had the opportunity to serve as the chief accounting officer for a little while. I did some mergers and acquisitions work for a while. I've been more on the operations side. So included in that is obviously kind of the hospital, you know, CFO role. But as part of that, I had the opportunity to actually supervise some functions such as care management. So I've just had, like I said, the opportunity to do so many different things, and that opportunity to, I think, within the career setting and within, you know, my organization, to be a lifelong learner has been really important to me and really valuable to me. I'm somebody who feels like I do my best work and I contribute the most when I'm also learning. And so that opportunity to do so many different things and see so many different perspectives has been a huge part of why I've been here for so long.
And I have a very important follow-up to that. Are the Zags going to go to the Final Four this year?
I think we all know that Gonzaga is a highly, highly superstitious bunch. And I would hate to go on record as the person who jinxes them one way or the other.
I think that was a very diplomatic answer. Yeah. I love it. I've seen that, like, every few years it seems like you move to a new position and move up and continue. And so thank you for telling us why you stay at Providence. But I'm also interested, just from like an HR perspective, of that upward mobility. And do you think that has made a difference in how you've seen your career grow and be able to grow and stay there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually read an article a few months ago that really resonated with me, that was, I believe it was called something like the career lattice. It was the career lattice instead of the career ladder. And, you know, as I describe, chief accounting officer, mergers and acquisitions, those are obviously very different functions. And so I would say absolutely the ability to move up within the organization, but also at times move laterally and experience different things. I, kind of being the accounting nerd that I am, I've often joked that, you know, 1 + 1 = 3, that I think ability to get a lot of diverse experience is part of what's contributed to my upward momentum and the ability to grow within the organization, because I think having a variety of skill sets and then being able to put them together is some of what creates that upward mobility. And then also at a large organization, you know, one of the things I like to share with people, particularly, you know, I think in the accounting and finance space, not everybody who loves to be in spreadsheets and loves to be doing budgets and loves to be doing debits and credits, not everybody wants to be a leader. It is not a calling for everybody. It's a different way to use your brain and your skills. And so I think, you know, again, the size of the organization. So yes, for me, it's meant both lateral and upward mobility, but that ability to do a variety of different things and have so much diversity and complexity without going anywhere is huge, because some people do love to just kind of stay in whatever space they're in, and maybe be a little bit more narrow and deep in that space. So yes, for me, an upward mobility, but also I think we offer to everybody kind of whatever is most meaningful to them, I think is also an opportunity.
Wonderful.
What are some of the as a professional woman, how do you think things have been different from you as a woman as compared to men, as you're 21 years plus the time before that, and challenges and opportunities, and how, kind of talk about that experience.
That's always a good question. I think in healthcare, so I would say in some ways, being in healthcare, I think has helped me, because overall it is a female dominated profession. And then at Providence in particular, you know, we were founded by the Sisters of Providence. And so there is a heritage of female leadership that we can lean on and we talk about. So that's been a huge positive. To me, kind of extending those themes across all industries, you know, again, I think just being in an environment where, you know, regardless of what your lived experience is, where you can talk about it openly is really important. And so, I mean, that was, you know, when I kind of get asked about being a woman in leadership, I think just putting yourself in space, whether it's, you know, networking spaces, mentoring, those kind of things is really important. And I would say then personally, the only other thing I would add is one of the things I've really had to learn to do and get outside of my comfort zone, which I think is kind of more common in women, is just learning to advocate for myself and kind of ask for that next opportunity, you know, and going back to the question about upward mobility, you have to be vocal. If that's something you're interested in, you have to say, I'm interested in that. Otherwise, you know, people don't automatically assume. And I think sometimes as women, we can be a little more, I might use the word humble and, you know, kind of not wanting to advertise that and maybe waiting for somebody to ask, are you interested? And that would be my biggest piece of advice, is don't wait for somebody to ask. If you're interested, you know, that should be part of your annual development conversation with your leader and your boss of, you know, what do you want to be doing, not just in the next 6 to 12 months, but what do you want to be doing in 5 years? And if that changes in 5 years, that's totally fine too, but don't wait for, you know, if you feel like you've got your life perfectly mixed, that'll be having those conversations.
Love that advice. That's great. Just to follow up on the leadership conversation, how have you developed your leadership style?
So I would say personally, I laugh and smile a bit because candidly, I think a lot of my leadership style has been trial and error and kind of falling flat on my face a little bit. I was, you know, if you look at my experience, I was in a number of my roles fairly early in my career. You know, looking back, you know, I would say if you think of a job description and do I meet those requirements, I always met the minimum, but I often found myself putting myself in a position of, I know I'm going into a stretch role. And a big part of that is, you know, I'd say the finance piece is relatively easy to learn. It's a technical thing. The leadership piece is really hard to learn. It's, you know, it's not like there's a textbook out there. Some of it's, again, just trial and error. You got to go do it. And so I definitely had a couple of, you know, big moments, what I would consider not failures, but definitely learning opportunities that have helped form me. I would say the biggest one that I share with people, when I was chief accounting officer, during that time, we were doing some early mergers and acquisitions. We were also starting to form and really consolidate our shared services. So, you know, for example, we used to have finance in 4 different places, and it's now one centralized function across the entire organization. And I was leading a lot of that work. And as I led through some of that work, one of the things I realized about myself is I'm a very optimistic person. And I shared with the team, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean there'll be layoffs. And, you know, in my attempt to help people not panic, you know, what I thought I said and what people heard, I realized in hindsight was different. And when the process was all said and done, there were a couple of positions eliminated. And you know, I am so thankful to this day that somebody sat down with me and just said to me very candidly, and this is, you know, somebody in my span of control who reported to me, and she said, I feel like you lied to us. And that was the hardest thing to hear because, you know, I'm somebody, I think all of us as humans and as leaders, we want to support our teams. We want, you know, them to feel confident and capable and successful and safe in their environment. And they don't feel that way if they feel like they've been lied to. And so that was probably my career, the hardest thing I've ever kind of had to hear, but I'm so thankful because in terms of a leadership style, it's really helped me make myself a lot more aware of, you know, things that I maybe see as strengths or benefits are actually sometimes harmful. And so it's helped me be, I think, a lot more honest and candid in how I communicate, also kind of a lot more authentic in how I communicate. And so, you know, through that, probably develop better relationships with people that I work with and who work for me.
Amazing. Yeah, there is a lot of research on authentic leadership, which is interesting. It's still emerging. Yeah. But you know, people trust people who they feel like they know and that are being humble and kind and understanding. And it's exactly what you described. So I think that's wonderful.
What are some of the opportunities in the healthcare sphere going forward in from your perspective?
It's endless. So are you thinking more career path or more just kind of the industry as a whole?
Industry as a whole. I mean, and the reason I mention that, and we get a lot of discussion in academia of challenges, and I'm like, well, but don't opportunities come out of challenges too? So I'm just curious about the opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say, you know, I think from a culture standpoint, one thing that we're working through, you know, like everybody, you know, post-pandemic, we had hyperinflationary times, some really significant, some workforce challenges, really significant macroeconomic factors facing us as an industry that we're responding to. I'd say one common theme is we're all really right now trying to shift from but feels very reactionary to really have a longer-term focus. So even thinking kind of within the finance space, you know, less, I shouldn't say less, but equal time on our long-range 3 to 5 year financial plan as our budget. That was normal pre-pandemic. It's been understandably in healthcare very chaotic since the pandemic. And so kind of getting back to that longer-term focus, I think, is a theme. Healthcare is not known for being very nimble, but that's something I think we need to do better at as a whole. So I would say that's kind of a business theme when I think of, you know, where we're headed as an industry. The other thing I think, you know, we're really tackling is there are so many changes coming in terms of how patients are cared for. So a simple one is site of care. You know, I had a friend just a couple weeks ago, you know, talking about sending me a question about something that she is scheduled for a procedure that's happening at an ASC. And 5 years ago, it was in a hospital, and she's not in the healthcare space. And she was asking, "Is this normal? Why am I not doing this in a hospital?" And so I think those site of care changes and how we're addressing that differently. A lot of hospitals are sampling what's called hospital at home. So actually, how do you take care of somebody in their home? We mentioned earlier about hospice. You know, the post-acute care space is growing as the population ages. So, you know, I think we used to be, frankly, as an industry, too hospital-centric, and this, you know, opening up of all of the different sites of care and what's the best way to take care of patients for whatever they're needing at any given time, I think is really fascinating and definitely something that will be evolving in the next 5 to 10 years.
That is very interesting. We have a benefit here as part of our compensation package that instead of going to a chiropractor, you can do activities and exercises through an app. And I remember the first time I saw that, I was like,
nobody's going to crack my back or my neck? Like, how does this work? How does this help me? Right? And so it took me a while to wrap my mind around it, just like the experience you're talking about with your friend. Shouldn't this be happening a different way? But we are coming up with different ways to treat people that are hopefully just as useful and caring. And
Do you
Oh, yeah. I fell off too many horses.
I feel like it feels good, but it keeps you coming back. Like whatever they do, like they hook you. Like it's like an addiction. I will never go. It's like,
okay. Yeah. I don't know if I feel the same way.
Fine.
Is getting into our weird psyches now.
Yeah, right. I'm totally rethinking our relationship now.
Oh boy.
So yeah.
We're in trouble.
What are you seeing? You know, so you're CFO of a Providence division. What are you seeing in your sphere as far as, and I'm thinking more specifically finance, accounting-ish, in AI analytics, how's that being leveraged? What's coming down the pipeline?
I candidly don't at this point have specific answers. It's definitely something we're keeping an eye on. I think less finance space, more, I think in the clinical space, a great example is our doctors spend way too much time charting. So, right, you think you go to a doctor and later you're able to look at your medical record and there's a summary of everything you guys talked about. Right now, the doctors are having to type that out or try and transcribe it. And that's actually someplace where we're investing in AI so that our doctors can spend more time, directly with our patients rather than in the medical record, which is obviously, the best use of their time. So I think there's some really interesting healthcare industry applications of AI. I don't know finance as much.
Yeah.
You probably noticed dialing in. It took me a little bit longer than both of you to dial into the Zoom. So I would say I didn't go into IT on purpose. I think I've definitely found the right calling in finance and not IT. And as part of that, in the space of finance, and this is something else I like being part of a large organization, I don't have accountability for the finance tools we use. There are people who love the process and tools work, and I'm not one of them. So I don't get as involved in that. I let them kind of do all those questions around, are all the cool new things coming, and help us filter to the best one. I really like to be a little closer to, just how do we use finance to help, drive operations, drive improvements for our patients. So it's a fantastic question for probably somebody else that might want to mention it.
I was going to transition a little bit. If we have students that are listening and they're really curious about how to have a career like yours, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I three things come to mind. The first, and we touched on this already, is just being comfortable being your authentic self. I think it's really easy, particularly early in your career, right? We all want to perform well. We want to go and kind of do our best. I have found that often, that fear of failure gets in the way of actually being your authentic self, and that actually, it hinders your performance, as whether it's a teammate, as a leader, or even kind of your technical skills, because you kind of get in your head a little bit. So definitely get comfortable being authentic. The second is I'm a big believer, be curious. I think your, anybody's individual passion is going to be what gets them kind of through their, help them progress in their career. And I think that comes from a place of curiosity of, I've spent a lot of time in my career, asking our clinicians in particular, when I talk about, I used to joke, at my last role, I told people, nobody gets capital until you teach me what that piece of equipment does, right? And it's just that inquiry around, help me understand what that does. And it's a fun way to connect to your teammates, but also it's a great way to learn and grow. And that, I think that takes you a really long ways. And then the last one, third, circling back to my experience of hospice, my boss at hospice had so many amazing kind of things that she taught me, life lessons to take forward that I still use today. But number one of those was, you know, she said to me, you know what, Shelby, it's really hard to break something so badly that you can't fix it. And that's so true. And so, you know, I would say, again, it's easy when you're, I think whether it's new to a job, new to your career, new to whatever, you start a lot more with a lot more apprehension than you do, you know, if you're 5, 10, 20 years in. And I think just remembering and giving yourself permission to be human, we're all human, we all make mistakes. What is much more valuable in the workplace is focusing on, you know, what can you learn from it and how can you help fix it? So we're all going to screw up. Don't try to not screw up. Don't purposely screw up, but also don't go out of your way to avoid it. It's inevitable. It's really how can you learn and how can you grow and how can you help fix it?
I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that typically as we kind of wrap things up, we ask for advice to any graduating students. I think you've already nailed that question for the most part. But any other tidbits of wisdom that for freshly sprung Zags out in the world?
Not that I can think of. I guess just enjoy it. You know, when I think of my journey, even though I've been with Providence 21 years, I've changed jobs several times within the organization. I would say less than half of them have been planned. So, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for as you go out there, take the time to enjoy it. Take the time to be open at the opportunities life presents to you and maybe consider something, you know, different than you hadn't originally planned on.
Be open, be curious. Great advice.
Awesome. Great to see you.
Yeah, likewise. Really great to see you.
Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Have a great day.
This podcast has been a production of the Gonzaga University School of Business Administration and was edited by Colby Verhoeven. Thank you to our hosts, Professors Stephanie Van Dellen and Andrew Brasich, and thank you for joining us.